Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Bombshell, Uncut Gems, and 1917. Well, presumably a Bombshell and 1917 fit together.
Well, yeah, a sentence could be made out of these, but I'm not sure it would be a sentence that made much in the way of sense. But the three movies are interesting in their different ways. I will start out by saying that even though this is very much the holiday season, none of these are holiday films, particularly. The movie industry doesn't seem to recognize the spirit of cheer. What they're mainly thinking is, what movies can we release as we get into the prime awards season so that we may get a chance at winning some? So that seems to be their thinking. So none of these are like Christmassy or anything like that, but they're interesting movies, but that doesn't mean that they're necessarily very good movies. And I want to start out with the one that I regard as the weakest, certainly the most disappointing of the bunch, which is Bombshell, written by Charles Randolph, directed by Jay Roach, and featuring a pretty darn good cast with people like Charlize Theron and the wonderful Nicole Kidman, and in smaller roles, John Lithgow, and well, actually he has a major role, in smaller roles, Malcolm McDowell and Allison Janney. A really good cast and a really interesting subject, but for me, the movie just doesn't manage to quite get together. This is a movie based very much on real life, and it is very much the kind of topic that's on everybody's minds in these recent years. It's very much a movie for the Me Too movement years. This is a movie based on the actual situation where some women at Fox News got fed up with the abusive behavior, particularly of the head of Fox News, Roger Ailes, and decided to take some kind of action. And that had worked out different ways with different women who were involved in this. But basically, Roger Ailes ended up being brought down in a pretty dramatic way. And I remember when all this was going on. And of course, those of us who don't much like Fox News were perfectly happy to see this scandal enveloping that network. Again, Roger Ailes being the head of it and pretty much the founder of it, and somebody whose real brilliance for ultra-conservative media went back to the Nixon years. It was satisfying for those of us with an ideological bent such as mine to see Roger Ailes brought down. So that is what this movie is all about. And the characters include people like Megyn Kelly and Gretchen Carlson and so forth. And we see them getting fed up with the things that are going on and starting to take action and consulting among themselves. Now, again, the cast of this movie is so wonderful. And Charlize Theron plays Megyn Kelly, I actually don't think it's a very good performance. Nicole Kidman, who is a wonderful actress, plays Gretchen Carlson. I don't think it's one of her better performances. The person who impressed me the most was John Lithgow, who plays Roger Ailes. And I'll tell you, this is one of these cases where somebody has got to play an old, well, let's say, very aging, really pretty much over the hill, very powerful and very sleazy patriarchal male, where somebody has got to play this character with a whole lot of verisimilitude. And John Lithgow gets the aging and over the hillness of it so powerfully, you kind of get worried about John Lithgow personally. I mean, is he okay? He just looks so awful up there on the screen. And yet there he is, and I'm perfectly willing to take this as a realistic portrait of what the older Roger Ailes was like. In any case, John Lithgow does a courageous job of erasing every shred of glamour from his movie star image. I mean, he's never been a glamorous leading man, but he's always been a very appealing actor and an actor who is very enjoyable to look at. And here, he really does it. I had trouble recognizing him at first. He really, really plays the unattractive old guy who you're not supposed to like and who you wouldn't like just by laying eyes on him. And then when you start getting a sense of his behavior, you like him even less. less. Anyway, to me, this is John Lithgow's movie. Again, I mentioned some of the people who are in the supporting cast, people like Alison Janney and Malcolm McDowell. They're just fine. But for me, again, the movie just never came together. These people are playing basically plastic people, plastic TV personalities. They're all supposed to be capable journalists in one way or another, but you don't get a sense of that. You just get a sense of they're just being two-dimensional people in a two-dimensional news world on a two-dimensional network. And the whole thing just ended up being two-dimensional in ways that I found not so much observational as just kind of deadening. I did not enjoy the movie very much, even though it is a subject. I went into the movie just expecting to be fascinated by it, and I just wasn't. So if you're really interested in this part of history, if you want to really see those stars, by all means, go see Bombshell. But I found it a facile and superficial look at a very interesting subject. Turning to the next movie, Uncut Gems, this is Adam Sandler's movie. This film was directed by Benny Safdie and Josh Safdie, who are very interesting filmmakers who specialize in sort of real high-energy cinema. And high energy doesn't get much higher or more energetic than you're going to find in Uncut Gems. This is a movie that hits the ground running and doesn't stop running at a breakneck pace for well over 2 hours, and I found it kind of compulsively watchable. And again, right at the center of this whole thing is Adam Sandler. And Adam Sandler, I can remember the days when he was just this guy who played these sort of crazy antic comic parts, and that's what he seemed just to be good for and not much else. And then he was in a movie like Punch Drunk Love, and you saw, well, he can really do more than this. You know, he is capable of more than this, but he never seemed to rise all that much above that kind of light comedy kind of level. But this is a movie where it's just an amazing performance. It's not a nuanced performance. It's kind of pretty much the same all the way through, but the energy of it and the sort of sense of conviction of it is such that you have trouble taking your eyes off the screen, and you certainly have trouble taking your eyes off of Adam Sandler on the screen, even though it has an interesting supporting cast as well. But he really is this movie. So Adam Sandler plays a guy who is a dealer in gems on the market. He's in the New York Diamond District, and he is very much meant to be a kind of a larger than life version of an ethnic stereotype, basically. He is the Jewish diamond dealer in the Jewish-dominated diamond district of New York. And he is an absolutely manic jewel dealer. And what he, at the beginning of the movie, interesting, it starts in Ethiopia in a diamond mine where this amazing kind of multiple gem thing is discovered. But pretty soon it gets shipped to New York, in fact, almost instantly. And then we're into the real meat of the movie. It is being shipped to our main character, the Adam Sandler character, whose name is Howie. It is an opal, and he has bought it. And he is convinced that it is worth an absolute fortune. He thinks he's going to get $1 million for it at an auction. So that's it. That could have been the end of the movie. The gem is discovered. The opal is shipped to him in New York, and he is going to get his $1 million, and that'll be fine. However, one of the people he deals with as a jewel dealer is a basketball player named Kevin Garnett, who is played by himself, interestingly. And he's pretty good. Not a bad actor. And Kevin Garnett gets one look at this opal, and he becomes instantly convinced that it has some sort of mystical significance for him, and that he is going to be able to win the enormously important semifinal game that's coming up if he just has this opal in his possession. And so against his better judgment, Howie, the dealer, allows Kevin Garnett to take this opal with him. In the meanwhile, however, Howie, the dealer, is somebody who has always got multiple deals going of all different kinds. And he is a huge gambler. So instead of using this opal that he has just gotten, instantly getting cash for it and paying off these debts, which he has, and he has a very very, very bad, dangerous guys who are right after him in the movie. Instead of simply paying off the debts, no, no, no. He is always doing this or that. He is pawning it so that he can get money to place a big bet on a big game, and then he will have even more money, except, of course, now he doesn't have the opal that he is hawking. And so, anyway, that's the way the movie gets started, and that's the way the movie keeps going. It is Howie juggling all of these deals in the air with all of these very, very dangerous guys coming after him, sometimes with deadly intent, trying to get his opal back from the basketball player. It does not come back to him in a nice, smooth, timely way, as it was supposed to. And in the meanwhile, you have other little things that are some of the movie's best inventions. For example, there's kind of a double security door on the Howard's jewel dealership showroom, which one would expect him to have. And the doors don't always work right. So sometimes his friends and sometimes his enemies are getting stuck in between these two security doors. Anyway, all kinds of crazy things happen. It is not a particularly lovable movie, but as I said, it is a movie of tremendously high energy with an amazing performance by Adam Sandler and good performances by a lot of other people. And again, if you want some high energy, can't take your eyes off of it for one single second kind of cinema, then this is the movie for you. The Safdies are just amazing filmmakers. They don't make deep stuff, but they make tremendously cinematic stuff, and it's quite a movie to watch. Last movie for today, Jill, 1917, takes place in, you guessed it, 1917, and it is a World War I movie, and it is about two young soldiers who are recruited to go on a very dangerous mission. One of the superior officers has found out that the enemy, these are British soldiers, has pulled off a ruse, and that an enormous attack is about to be launched by the British, and it's all a trap. And if they go ahead with this attack, going on 2,000 men will surely be killed. So these two young soldiers are recruited to get from this place to that place, which is a lot of very dangerous no man's land type territory, from this place to that place with an urgent message, don't go ahead with this attack. So that's what this movie is. It is these two young soldiers going off on this mission. And one of them was selected because his brother is among the 1,600 soldiers who will surely be killed if that attack takes place. And then the other one is somebody who he chooses, a friend of his. Will you go with me? Yeah, okay, I'll go with you. Yeah, we'll do this mission and we'll do something heroic. But again, it's a very dangerous mission because they simply have to get from point A to point B with this message, but it's an urgent message with a tremendous amount of human life hanging on it, and the territory they have to cross is extremely dangerous. So that is the story of the movie. The story could not be more simple, getting from point A to point B. What's really interesting about 1917, the movie, by the way, which is directed by Sam Mendes and photographed by the great Roger Deakins, is that this whole movie takes place in what appears to be one single shot. That is to say, there is no editing. There is no cutting from this shot to that shot. Now, there surely are some hidden edits in the movie. You know, the two guys have to go through some incredibly dark, murky as night little area. And of course, you can sneak in a cinematic edit there. You can cut to a different shot. The battlefield is obscured by smoke for the moment. And you can get in these hidden edits. And filmmakers have always done that when they want to appear to be doing extremely long takes that go on for a long time. But they really got to have some hidden edits in there. However, watching 1917, it is really clear that there are a lot of enormously long takes going on here, shots that go on for minutes and minutes and minutes, very, very long things. And what that means is not only do you have to have your camera work calculated down to the ultimate decimal point in order to get things exactly right, captured exactly right, the image captured exactly right, but you have to have all the action that's happening around the camera and in front of the camera has to be choreographed to take place at exactly the right instant, moment to moment to moment. It's enormously challenging. to make this kind of cinema. And it's been done in the past. Alfred Hitchcock did a version of this back in the late 1940s in a movie called Rope, which the cameras at that time would only hold about 10 minutes worth of film. So he had to have a whole lot of more or less hidden edits in that movie. And the movie was less than an hour and a half long. 1917 is 2 hours long. And there's a tremendously long take in the movie Atonement, and there's some marvelous long take stuff in The Children of Men. So, you know, this is something filmmakers do from time to time. The Russian filmmaker Alexander Sokurov made a bravura movie called Russian Ark, which is one of the first movies quite a number of years ago to use computer technology in doing this. 1917, some people are sort of raising the issue, is this just a gimmick? Does it really have to be a single take film? This is a suspense movie. And watching these suspenseful moments unfold as these two young guys traverse this unbelievably dangerous territory, watching this with the camera not ever cutting away, but always staying on exactly what's happening. It's just enormously successful as a device for telling a suspense story. I found the movie absolutely gripping. I have to mention that it has a good supporting cast. Colin Firth, Benedict Cumberbatch shows up near the end. Really, really good cast. But mainly, this is a movie about cinema, and I found it absolutely gripping there. If you want to see one of the best war movies in years and years and years, with, by the way, some real story surprises along the way, then 1917 is the movie to see. And if you're interested in what movie cameras can do, then 1917 is even more the movie to see. So that is my somewhat cinematic story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you, as always, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Bombshell, Uncut Gems, and 1917.